let's think about where we've been and where we're heading in terms of our limud of Inyanei Purim. We've had the chance so far to work on two of the many sugyas of Maseches Megillah, of Inyanei Purim, Be'iyun, the sugya of Sirtut. We had a chance to work through the beautiful Gemaras and delicious Machlokas Rishonim, Briskerov. We had a chance to work through over the last couple of days to work through the sugya of Mishloach Manos, and to see main afkaminas in that Kor Chakira, and to see how it works into very, very elegantly into the language of the Rambam. And we also had a chance to see how it expands beyond Mishloach Manos as well. That once you take a nuanced approach to the Rambam Shita, it's not just a din in Suda, but that's an expansion of Suda. And already it points the way forward, as we saw yesterday, for expanding even further and seeing how Matan Savyonim is both a counterpoint and a complement to a Suda and Mishloach Manos. It's the Simcha expressed, Simcha Sanefesh. We even saw, it could be that Mikra Megillah also, the Ahalal aspect of Mikra Megillah is also, the way the Rambam presents it, with the Meiri, an aspect of Simcha Sanefesh as well. All the mitzvahs may ultimately come under the umbrella of Simcha, and we had a chance to think al derech machshava, why that would be so. So we had a chance to work on two sugyas b'in, and now I want to shift gears a little bit and begin to touch lightly on a number of topics. If you have a Mishnah Brewer, feel free to flip through the pages with me. But I want to start from the beginning and touch on some of the highlights of Inyanei Purim, and then we'll see how time goes, either today or next time. Maybe we'll focus back to go back into Gemara Rishonim, into a particularly relevant sugya near the end of Hilchos Megillah. And now let's turn our attention to Hilchos Megillah. Hilchos Megillah, the title on top of the page, in Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah, even though it's not, as we know, only Megillah, it's the same is true with the Rambam as well. He calls it Hilchos Megillah, the Chanukah. It's not only Megillah. As a matter of fact, it's true for the Masechta as well. We call it Maseches Megillah for two reasons. Number one, because that's the first word of the Masechta, as is the case with Sukkah and Beitzah. And also because the bulk of the halachas are about the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. But the first siman, question: what do you call the first siman? Tafresh Pehe appears officially as part of the end of Hilchos Chanukah. It's the Dal Parshas, so that's sort of in between Chanukah and Purim, then going beyond Purim, and then Hilchos Megillah proper begins with Tafresh Pehe Vav, the following siman, the halachas of Tanis Esther. So Tanis Esther is sort of a fascinating Tanis, just to put it into perspective. When we think about the Tanios we have over the course of the year, in terms of Tanios that everyone keeps, so there are six. And two of these six are not like the others. Because we have four of the six Tanios. Well, let's begin with Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is, as we know, that's a Tanis Daraisa, Psukim in the Chumash. And that's pretty clearly in the Chumash meant to be a Tanis of Kapara. The theme is Kapara Savonis. Then you have four Tanios which appear to be midrabanan. You have the four tanyos that are about the churban, shivas betamas and tishabav, tzom gedalia and asar betavis. I think tzom gedalia time we had the opportunity to take a look at the gemara in Rosh Hashanah Yechesim days. It points to a pasuk in Zechariah that mentions all those four tanyos: tzom ravi, tzom chamishi, Tzom HaShvi, Tzom HaAsiri. This fast of the fourth month, the fifth month, that's Tammuz and Av. The seventh month and the tenth month, that's Tishrei and Tevis. So that's Shavas B'Tammuz, those are four we just mentioned. Shavas B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, Tzom Gedalia and Tishrei, and Asar B'Tevis. The context in Zechariah is that Jewish people come back to Eretz Yisrael. They're in the process of building the second base of Mikdash, and they ask the Navi Zechariah, so how does it work? The last 70 years or so we've been fasting these four Tanyas. Ha'evke, are we still supposed to fast? Or now that we're building the base of Mikdash, it's meaningless to fast for the Korban Bayis Rishon. And the Gemara points out there that the Navi Zechariah gave what seems like an ambivalent answer. He sounds like he sort of says yes, and sort of says no, and sort of says maybe. And the Gemara points out that means so any of those three options is conceivable, depends on the context. It all depends. In the time of Shmad, Zechiv to fast. In the time of Geula, no fasting. Second Beis HaMikdash is no fasting at all. And when it's in between, so then Ratzu Misanin, Ratzu E Misanin. Then it's optional. So Post can point out that Bizman is that we live at a time, it's not a time of intense pogroms, but at the time, on the other hand, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So we assume that right now we're in a position of Ratzu Misanin, Ratzu E Misanin. We're in the middle context where it's really optional. And the Post can write, Kavar Shav Yuhu Alayu Chova, Klal Yisrael has accepted B'Torah's mini Gisrael to take that option to fast halfway. Halfway we only fast during the day, and half except in Tisha B'Av, and halfway that we only refrain from eating and drinking, not from the Shari Nuyim, again except in Tisha B'Av. And that's why there were those as recently as during the Holocaust, who, of course, World War II, felt that you had to keep all the Dalatanios like Tisha B'Av, Yomo Lelo Ke Yomo, all the Chamisha Inuyim, because then it was not just Ratzu Misanin, that was a Chiv. So you have Yom Kippur as a Tzom Daraisa, you have the four Tzomos of the Churban, which again have a variable status, and then you have Tainas Esther. So where does Tainas Esther fit in? Where so does...
Who determines Shas Shmad?
Who determines Shas Shmad? Probably like any other shaila has to be determined by Poskim. What the boundary is a good question. What the boundary is a good question. But I want to turn our attention to our focus, which is apparently even less than that. Because Tainas Esther is number the level of Chiyuv, whether Tainas Esther is a Chiyuv Midrabanon or a Chiyuv Mitaminig is a good question. The Gemara doesn't clearly speak about Tanis Esther. There is a line earlier in the first paragraph of Megillah that's a Yom Kahal, Yom Kehila La Kahal, the day of gathering. So what that means is a good question. Some do understand that means the day of gathering together to fast and do tshuva. But then the larger question, whether it's Medina or it's Minig Hagaonim, the question is also what's the significance of it. So it's not a tainus of churban. It's not a tainus of churban. It's a tainus. That's the way the post. If you have a mishnah open in front of you, sivkan bay tough reish pave up sivkan bays. He quotes it's a zecher not to the 3 days of fasting before Esther went in. The Chazal assumed that happened Pesach time. It's a zecher to the fasting that took place on the Tanis Esther is the day that they went to war. It was the day it was supposed to be the Shemad of the Jewish people, and it was the day that instead we successfully went to war against the those who wanted to kill us. It was the day that we successfully defended ourselves. That was Yud Gimel Adar. Now, it's the day we successfully defended ourselves. Why are we fasting? Why are we fasting? So number one, the old Minhag Yisrael was to fast as a form of tefillah on a day of war that you see in Sefer Shmuel, the story of Yonasan and the honey. He did not know that his father Shaul, King Shaul, had decreed a fast because it was a day of war. You see, that was a common idea. That was part of a chelik of the tefillah that we'd be successful at war was to be misana. So we are misana as a zecher to that. So now, so what does that mean? It's a tanis of tefillah. It's a tanis of tefillah, as Rabbi Shechter develops in an article in Bikvei Atzom, based on a tshuva of Rav Avadia Yosef. It's a tanis shel simcha. It's a tanis shel simcha. It's a new type of tanis. Until I heard that idea, I always felt uncomfortable. You know, oftentimes tanis Esther is usually Erev Purim, unless Purim is on a Sunday. The Tainas Esther afternoon is often the time when Purim Spiels get written. And sometimes you have Chavra who are well-organized and write the Purim Spiel days, weeks in advance. And other times things are a little more Hamish and the Purim Spiel is getting worked on, whether it be written first draft, second draft, or the final touches. Usually at least the final touches are happening Tainas Esther afternoon. I used to feel very uncomfortable about that because it's Dachat Tainas. It seemed out of character. And even if you're not a Spieler, But, you know, the last couple hours before Purim are usually very Purimdik. But with this approach of Rav Shechter and Rav Adya, so I think it's consistent and congruent. It's the Tainus Shel Simcha. He actually points out, ironically, there might be Chumrus because of Tainus Shel Simcha. Normally, if there is a Simcha on a Tainus, let's say there's a Bris on a Tainus, so depending on whether it's a Nidcha or not Nidcha, sometimes the Bris will eliminate some aspects of the Tainus for the major Balei Simcha, for the father of the baby, for the mole, the Sandik perhaps. So they developed the idea that could be a Tainus Esther that would not happen. Since Tainus Esther is Tainus Shel Simcha, there's no clash between the Bris and the Tainus. If the Tainus is a Tainus of Avelos, Asar Batavis, and so forth, so then there's a clash between the Simcha and the Tainus, and sometimes the Tainus will lose. Because Tainus Esther is a Tainus Shel Simcha, so it's not really at odds with the Simcha of the Bris. So ironically, you might... The Bris might not detract from the Tainus, and there's an argument to be made that you do need to maintain the Tainus of Tainus Esther more than a different Drabban on Tainus in the face of a Bris. But at the same time, as I said, the mood fundamentally is a far more positive one, a far more optimistic one. It reminds us of that time when Kal Yisrael fasted and davened on Yud Gimel Adar, and we were at Kadosh Baruch Hu grants us tremendous success. It's a zecher for tefillah, and it's a zecher for successful, evident Kabbalah Satfil. It's always, Tfilah's always successful. You don't necessarily see it. But on the original Tainus Esther, we got to see it. We got to see it. So we're fast on that day, and then we celebrate more overtly the day after, which is either Purim or Shushan Purim, depending where you live. Then Shulchan Aruch, they also say, they talk about this notion of
that. So would people celebrating Shushan Purim fast on Purim itself as well? Because Shushan they fought on Yud Gimel.
I don't think so. The Shulchan Aruch does quote a line, the last Ksif in Tafresh Peivav, that there were those who had the minig, this is not a common minig, just to be clear, there were those who had a minig to fast for 3 days after Purim. Zecher l'Tanis Esther, means Zecher to the Tainus, 3 days of Tanis, Pesach time, when Esther was preparing to go into Achashverosh. So those were consecutive. These are not consecutive. Just to be clear, that is not a widely held minhag at all. You should not be fasting then. But the concept was out there at... it was a minhag practice by some tzaddikim in an earlier generation. Now, the poskim then talk about another thing that goes on in Tainus Esther. I'm sure that's what Shul wants to raise. And that's the question of Machzis HaShekel. Machzis HaShekel. So what is the story with, what is this all about? Machzis HaShekel. So the poskim point out that there is a mitzvah d'oraisa of Machzis HaShekel. And when we'll have a Beis HaMikdash, we'll have a mitzvah d'oraisa every year to give Machzis HaShekel. Mishnayos tells me of Shkalim that collection would take place, would begin over the course of the month of Adar. And just to explain what that means, the level of De'oraisa, there are, when you have, in Beis HaMikdash, there are Karbanos Yach and Karbanos Tzibur. Many Karbanos are brought by individuals, and then you have certain Karbanos that need to be brought by Klal Yisrael. Most frequently, the Tamid, the two Tamidim every day, morning and evening, and the Karbanos Musaf, every Shabbos, every Rosh Chodesh, every Yom Tov. That bill was paid by Klal Yisrael. And it's not just a question of who's going to fund it. The funding of a carbon helps to identify who the Balei HaKarbon are. If I pay for the animal, I provide the animal, that makes it my carbon. Klal Yisrael pays for those sheep and so on and so forth, and those Tamidim Musafim become carbonists of Klal Yisrael. It would not be allowed for a private individual to say, you know, I'm gonna take care of the carbon tamid in the month of Sivan. Sometimes, you know, when they're doing auctions in Shul Yontif time, they'll auction off the right to pay the electricity bills for this month and for that month. Obviously, paying electricity bills in the summer is much more expensive, and paying gas bills in the winter, that's very expensive. It's a beautiful thing to do for a shul, to pick up for a private person to say, I'm glad to pick up the bills. To do it quietly is even more special, without fanfare. But in the Beis HaMikdash, it's not allowed. It's specifically not allowed for a private person to fund the Karbanos Tzibur, because then they're not Karbanos Tzibur. So how will Karbanos be Karbanos Tzibur? So the answer is, that's why the Torah gives us this institution, Daraisa, of collecting Machzis HaShekel, the democratization, so to speak, of Karbanos Tzibur. It needs to be paid for by the Tzibur. Paid for by the Tzibur means we have a communal collection from Klal Yisrael, even if there are individuals here and there that don't give, but that money, because of the way it's being collected, that money is seen as the funds of Klal Yisrael, and the funds of Klal Yisrael are buying the Tamidim Musafin and whatever other Karbanos Tzibur need to be bought. More details in Maseches Shkal. Now, when's the fiscal year for Karbanos? Does it have to be a fiscal year? In other words, can you just have constantly money going in and money going out, collecting more money and paying for Karbanos? So the Mishnayos tell us, no, there is a fiscal year. You have to use this year's money to pay for this year's Karbanos. I can't use last year's money to pay for this year's Karbanos. Mishnayos talk about what do you do when you have leftover money, or if people only give money later. Someone only gets around to paying his bills 2 years later. But that's old money that's not used for the regular Karbanos Tzibur. Regular Karbanos Tzibur are bought with fresh this year's collections. How does that work? So the Mishnayos tell us that the fiscal year means the year for financial purposes, the fiscal, many businesses will do their annual accounting from a date other than January. Just like the school year starts in September, runs through August, so a business can have a fiscal year. So the Mishnayos tell us that Beis HaMikdash for Karbanos Tzibur had a fiscal year. Fiscal year began Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So start Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and less than a month from now, we should be zochet the Beis HaMikdash, the Karbanos of Tavshin Pei Aleph, from Nisan, Tavshin Pei, through Adar, Tavshin Pei Aleph, are all bought from only money that was collected for that year, and that money begins to come in a week ago. That money, that collection, the collection for the upcoming fiscal year begins Rosh Chodesh Adar. That's the opening Mishnah Masech HaShkalim. Ve'echa ba'adar mashmini ma'ashkalim. You begin to announce in all the shuls, we're collecting, and it sounds from the Mishnah is that there was a pretty efficient system. The communities would collect, and then over the course of Adar, they would, over the course of the first part of Adar, communities would be collecting the money. By a certain point, they had most of the money in, and then they would ship it to Yerushalayim. Ship it to Yerushalayim with enough time that come Aleph Nisan, you already have, you're bringing animals that were bought from the fresh collection. More money will continue to come in over the course of the year and be used, but you already had enough money up and running, less than a month, that things could continue in the Beis HaMikdash without delay and without hafzek. So that's a mitzvah daraisa of Machzis HaShekel, and that's why Tavshin Tavresh Pei Hei, Arba Parshos, the first of the Arba Parshos, is Parsha Shkalim, which is the Shabbos that leads into Rosh Chodesh Adar, and that's to remind us, in days of Beis HaMikdash, there is such a mitzvah daraisa of collecting Machzis HaShekel. We should be zocha next year, Mitzvah Shem. We'll have a Beis HaMikdash, and Aleph Adar will be collecting Machzis HaShekel. That's a mitzvah daraisa, as I stress, that applies when you have a Beis HaMikdash. We do not have a Beis HaMikdash, L'davoneinu, and therefore we do not have a mitzvah daraisa Machzis HaShekel. Not only that, but if a Jew were to take money and say this money is Machzis HaShekel, you have a very severe issur daraisa, potential issur daraisa on your hands. Because that money, if a Jew really intends for the money to be Machzis HaShekel, then you have a concern of potentially of Me'ila. That money is set aside Mukdash for Kadosh Mizbeach, and it cannot be used for anything other than buying Karbanos. And being that we have not yet been Zochet Beis HaMikdash, that's a difficult situation. The Gemara talks about such a concern in other cases as well. If a Jew were to take something at home and say he's being makdish it for a karban, being makdish it for Beit HaKabayis, for the upkeep based on the Mikdash, that's a very, very challenging halachic situation. As a matter of fact, Post can point out, Rishon already discussed this somewhat extensively, if you're a Jewish farmer raising kosher behemos, I have a friend who owns from friend Talmud Chacham who owns goats. So we discussed how to make sure that his doesn't end up with a Bechor Behema Tahora in his herd. Because generally an animal only becomes a carbon if you designate it as such, if you're Makdashi. Every carbon needs Kiddush Peh. has to be expressly designated by the owner. The one exception is Bechor. If a kosher animal gives birth to her Bechor, and that Bechor meets all the specifications, the firstborn, it's a male, and so on and so forth, and then it automatically becomes Kadosh B'Kedushas Karban. The Gemara says that there's value to being Makdish B'Peh as well. Hold on. The Gemara tells us that there's value to being adding a Kiddush Peh. You should take the Bechor. Should take the Bechor and say, I raise the Bechor, but even without it, it becomes Kadosh automatically. It's Kadosh Meirechem. So the post can point out, the days of Beis HaMikdash is beautiful. Wonderful, you have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, to bring a Bechor to Beis HaMikdash. But nowadays, we have nothing to do. There's no good outcome. You're just going to wait for it to become get a mum, so you keep hold it. And that could take years. That's what the post can say. You try to avoid having a Bechor Behemoth Tahor. So you'll sell. If you realize you have a behemah mivakaras, a mother that's going to have a baby for the first time, you can either do a sonogram and see whether the baby is a male or female, or alternatively, you just sell a stake in the mother to a nachri, and that way it's a shutfus yisrael v'nachri, and there's no din of bechor when the baby is born. So the question is, okay, so we try to avoid the bimakdash things nowadays, because we don't yet have a beis hamikdash, so how about we've all heard of Machzah Shekel. So what is this Machzah Shekel? So just to clarify, that is not Machzah Shekel. Chas v'shalom. If that was actually Machzah Shekel, that would be a severe me'ila problem. It would be a vera gedola to give those funds to the poor. You're being machshel them in me'ila. What it is, as every responsible sign on those tzedakah box will say, it's a zecher l'machzah shekel. This is a minig ha'ga'onim. There is such an idea in the last paragraph of Rosh Hashanah to make a Zeichel Mikdash based on Psukim Riyahu, we just said. In Parsha Shkolim, Zeichel Mikdash. So, Machsa collecting Tzedakah, Zeichel, Machsa Shekel, on Erev, on Tanis Esther, on Erev Purim, is another Zeichel Mikdash. But it's important to be very clear when you give Zeichel Machsa Shekel, it's only a Zeichel, it's Tzedakah for Aniyim, which is Zeichel Machsa Shekel. Okay. So those are some of the topics of Tanis Esther, both to appreciate what the tzom is and how unique it is among the other tzomos, and to appreciate the din d'oraisa machzah shekel, which you should be zochet to fulfill next year, together with the minig Yisrael, the minig hagaonim of a zecher l'machzah shekel. A couple of points about Mikra Megillah. We spoke extensively. A couple of weeks ago, we learned from the sugya of Sirtut. We had a chance to dig into some of the dinim of the Cheftza Shel Megillah. But let's talk a little bit in a lighter mode of some of the halachas of the Maisa, of Mikra Megillah. So there is a machlok, as we discussed, machlokas ataram, how much of the Megillah we read. Whether we read the story of Haman, the story of Mordechai, or the full, going back to when we were first introduced to Achashverosh, Mitzvashem. Next week we'll have the opportunity, probably by Zoom, to learn part of the Megillah inside. But certainly we know that we pass and we learn the entire, not only do you need all 10 prakim of the Megillah, written in the Megillah for it to be a kosher Cheftza Shel Megillah, but the Maisa Kriya also requires you read all 10 prakim. And we make brachas before and after, as you know. And ideally, Mikra Megillah should happen with a minion. Sometimes you don't have a chance. You have someone who's homebound. Even in a more typical year, you can have someone who's homebound for a variety of reasons. Poskim assume that laying Megillah with a minion is a hidur. But other than the Gratz, assume that it is a hidur. But if you don't have that option, you don't have the Brovim Hadras Melech, you can Mekayim Megillah B'Yachid as well. Now, the Mikra Megillah, as we know, has to be done mitoch haklaf. You have to have a kosher Megillah. A kosher Megillah written on parchment. You can't be yotzei the Mikra Megillah by reading the Megillah out of a printed chumash. That is, however, not entirely true. And even before I talk about people who are quarantined at home, let's just talk about a more standard case. You have a Jew who came to shul, a man, a woman, comes to shul, and you miss a couple words. There was too much banging for Haman, or you brought along a child who you thought would be quieter than he or she ended up being, or someone fell, or something happened, you miss a couple words here and there. The Baal Kriya was mumbling. So what do you do when you miss a few words? So here's a fascinating thing. There's a difference between Kriyas HaTorah and Mikra Megillah. You cannot be Yotze the entire Mikra Megillah out of a printed Chumash. Printed Chumash considered to be Baal Peh. But you can be Yotze a small part of Megillah Baal Peh. You don't have to hear, you have to hear every word or read every word, but you do not have to hear or read every word Mitoch HaKzav. The bulk of it is Mitoch HaKzav, but here and there you can hear bits and pieces Baal Peh, and Baal Peh either mean you actually remember the words or that you're reading from a Chumash. So if you miss, I'm sure you've heard these announcements in the past, if you miss a few words here and there, it's important to look inside the Chumash and say the words to yourself and catch up as quickly as you can without compromising the integrity of your pronouncing the words. Try to catch up to the Baal Kriya as efficiently as you can, so you'll have Yotze a little bit of the Megillah Baal Peh, and you'll get back to hearing the Baal Kriya lane mitoch haksav. Obviously, if you come to shul and you're following along in with your own kosher Megillah, so then you can read as much as you want from the cloth. And that seems like obviously a far more ideal situation. There is, however, a danger to bringing a cloth to shul. Let's talk about what the danger is and how you solve it. And that is, Gemara tells the end of Maseches Megillah, it's forbidden to touch a Sefer Torah with your bare hands. It's considered to be a severe violation of Kavod HaTorah. To touch the cloth with your bare hands. That's why if there's a problem with the galila or something like that, typically you'll glove your hands in the talis so you can handle the cloth without actually touching it with your bare hands. So the question is, how about Megillah? So everyone is careful about this when it comes to Sifrei Torah, and Sifrei Torah have Atzei Chaim. The cloth of the Megillah doesn't have any Atzei Chaim. Everyone sits in shul holding the cloth. Is that a beautiful thing, or is that an Isser? That's the story. So if you look in Yoredeya, in Hilchos Sefer Torah, you discover there are two machloksin about this issue, and we are makel if you have both tzdadim lahakal. There is a machlokas we've shown him, whether this whole issue of touching the Sefer Torah, touching the cloth with your bare hands, does that apply only to Sefer Torah, or even to Nevi'im and Ksuvim? That's what machlokas we've shown him. Another machlokas we've shown him, is regardless of what it is that you're touching, whether it's Sefer Torah or Nevi'im Ksuvim, is it only usher if you haven't just washed Tehillas Yadayim? There are some Rishonim who argue that if you just wash Tehillas Yadayim, then it's mutter to touch even a Sefer Torah. So some say that there's no Isser Negiah if you just didn't Tehillas Yadayim, and some say there's no Isser Negiah at all on Nevi'im Ksuvim. So we, poskim right in Yeredeya, we are not makel like either position alone, but we are makel using the combination of the two. In other words, you cannot wash and tehillas yadayim and then touch a Sefer Torah, nor is it advised that you touch Nevi'im Ksuvim cloth without washing and tehillas yadayim. But if you wash and tehillas yadayim, then you can touch Nevi'im Ksuvim. That's why what's advised, If you're handling a cloth of the Megillah, so we'll take a cup and wash Tehillas Yadayim with a cup, and then you're allowed to touch the cloth of the Megillah freely. Now, another issue that's relevant to Hilchos Megillah, but is adjudicated elsewhere, is the question of microphones. Right? Where do you find microphones in Shulchan Aruch? Where do you find the telephones and microphones in Shulchan Aruch? You find it in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah. A number of simanim earlier, like 70, 80 simanim earlier or so. They talk about, like 100 simanim earlier. Based on Mishnayos and Maseches Rosh Hashanah, they talk about an echo. What do you do if someone's blowing shofar in a cave and you're outside the cave, someone's blowing shofar in a barrel and you're outside the barrel? The such scenario probably was more common under Roman persecution, Roman religious persecution. Jews were hiding for the mitzvah of shofar and other mitzvahs. A Jew is hiding in some confined space, so the Mishnah and Gemara start to talk about, well, how does that work if you're only hearing the echo? The echo might not be acceptable. And based on that, and other sugyas, poskim discuss, how about if you're hearing shofar or megillah or any other mitzvah requires shamei ka'ona if you're hearing it through electronic means. You're listening on the telephone. By the way, Shecht likes to point out there's a famous chazan. You know, in an earlier generation, he used to call his mother every Matzah Shabbos and make havdalah for her. His mother was a widow at that point. So he would call her on the phone and make havdalah for her over the phone. I'm sure it was a lengthy, beautiful, cantorial havdalah. I'm sure his mother shat nachas from his 20-minute havdalah. The question is, are you yotzei or not? So that's a big machlokes haposkim. Yesh omrim yes, yesh omrim no, and yesh omrim safik. So the Shechter assumes that... That the shasat, if you're in a shasat chak, if a Jew who's not able to come to Mikra Megillah and no one is able to visit him and lead Megillah for him, if there's no other option, that's what we call a shasat chak. When you have no other option, so then you rely on the approach that listening to a live performance by Zoom, by phone, and so on and so forth would be the way to go. So if someone is quarantined and no one is able to come in and he does not have his own clap that he can read from, or he has a clap but he doesn't know how to use it, if he has a clap, doesn't know how to use it, so then the best would be to listen along to someone else who's reading and read from the clap. But if that's not an option either, so then Shasat Chak, we would tell him he should listen by phone or listen to on a video conference and be yotzei in that way. One more important din I would raise in the world of Hilchos Megillah often gets overlooked is that the poskim write that one should be coming Mikra Megillah and perhaps Purim in general, a Jew should be in Big Day Shabbos. That's what the Ashkenazi poskim quote. The Jew should be in Big Day Shabbos. So it could be you could expand it more broadly to say Big Day Purim. I mean, maybe you can make the argument that if you're coming in uniquely... Purim designated clothing, I think there's probably room to make all that a Jew could come, you know, could wear a costume on Purim. But I would definitely say that's the minig of our yeshiva. Again, this year, sounds like our yeshiva is going to be tzushpreit over the course of Purim, unfortunately. It's always been the minig of our yeshiva to follow this Ramah, and everyone comes to Mikra Megillah, and over the course of Purim, either guys are wearing suits and ties, or guys are wearing costumes, or you figure out a way to combine the two. Sometimes you can have a costume that is Big Day Shabbos plus. But stam to just dress in school clothing or less, that's certainly not appropriate on Purim.